Luke, in recording the shipwreck of the Apostle Paul on the island of Malta, makes the observation that the barbarians treated them with no little kindness. The word barbarian did not have the implications then that it does now. It meant people outside the pale of Greek culture. And we want to say about our journey to the south, and particularly our stay in Chile, that they treated us with no common kindness. They received us worthily of the Lord. My task tonight is to take you with us on that journey and to make you feel a part of it. I have been doing some reading of late about how we can charge Christians with a desire to be a part of evangelism. And I want to say, as I began this journey tonight, that I think there is very little chance that any group of Christians will get vitally involved in preaching to lost people until they get vitally involved with the process and with the people. And so the elders of the congregation here have exercised a great deal of wisdom, and I am confident that they have been encouraged in that direction by many of the members, that we should know the people with whom we have fellowship, that we should be personally aware as much as we can be with the challenges they face, with the opportunities that are theirs, so that we can be good partners. But there's something that's even more important than that. It seems to me, not only do we enhance our ability to be useful partners with other men in other places, but we enlarge our own hearts so that we can become more productive as disciples of the Lord. I thought this morning I would remember to say something that I didn't remember to say when I talked about coming to learn and going to teach. That one of the hopes I have in talking about things like this is that some of these young men, maybe some that are sitting on this front row, and maybe some that are sitting back in the audience, will begin to think about what they can do to reach some of these people that do not know the gospel of Christ. It was discussions like I'm going to be involved in tonight a long time ago that stirred me to go to the upper Midwestern United States, because I heard men talk about the small struggling churches that existed and the vast expanses of those areas where there were no churches. I can remember when I was a college student that a group of us would gather in the building one of the local churches every Saturday evening, and three of us would speak and the rest would listen, which was sometimes not a small challenge. But if there was anything that was characteristic of those gatherings, if it was not always the most sophisticated knowledge of the Word of God, we were just trying to grow up a bit and learn, it was the fact that there was a spirit of earnestness about it. And we tried to stir each other up. I will not forget the prayer that was prayed by one young man on one particular Saturday evening. In the midst of his prayer, he said, "Lord, we wish we could tell you that we have taken the gospel to all the people in this world." But he said, "We can't tell you that." There was a desire in him to reach that worthy objective,
the Lord had put it in him. I don't know what happened to that young man afterward. But I know this, that there is in the heart of every person who's been touched very much by the Son of God the desire to see that the gospel goes everywhere. Young people, some of you are going to have to take it to some of these places. Some of you are going to have to learn Spanish or Portuguese. Some of you are going to have to learn some of these languages. You see, if we're Christians, it's not a matter of thinking about what other people are going to do. It's a matter of thinking about what I'm going to do. What part I'm going to play in this process. I'm speaking to you tonight, and not just the young men, but they'll need some young ladies to marry who are willing to go with them to these places and endure the hardship that's a part of it. I'm speaking to you like Lester Disselkamp used to talk to us when he came down to Abilene. And as I recall, he'd say something like, I don't know who ought to go to Wisconsin. I don't know who ought to go to Minnesota. So I'm talking to everybody about it. And then we'll find out who ought to go up there. But we need to quit thinking about somebody else will do that. Somebody else will not. What will I do? And then we need to recognize that it's not a matter just of going and living in a place. Some of us are not in a position to do that, even if we would like to do it. But we can go there for a week. Or we can write letters to people that are there. And we can pray for people that are there. And I believe that in some considerable way, we have begun that process in this congregation. It just needs to continue and enlarge. We don't know yet what we can do. We don't know what we can do. We haven't found that out yet. We found out a few things we can do. But God alone knows the potential of the Christians that meet in this building. Not just to reach people in this end of Louisville, and that's where we live, and that's the work that the Lord is especially going to expect us to do, but in other places too. Larry and I were always a bit, not puffed up, but we were glad to be able to say, when men in South America said, I have been supported by a church in the United States for 12 years, I have yet to receive one personal letter. We were glad to say that that's not true, this is in. Let it increase. I'll give you some addresses of people. I'll have to give you the names and addresses of those that can read English, because that's the only ones I can write to effectively. But if you'd like to write to someone who only reads Spanish, give your letter to Brother Payton and let him translate it, and then he'll send it on down. But it will be good. I want your heart to be in this world. I want it to be everywhere that we're supporting men. I want my heart to be there. I was privileged to go down and see these things. It's my obligation, my responsibility, my duty to you to make you sense and to feel the opportunities, the needs, and the blessings that are in that place. The Lord's church is a mighty big family. You and I never will know most of them, even though they're alive. They're our contemporaries. We won't see them. We'll see some of them, and we will live with some of them, and we'll be blessed for that experience, because we'll see each other eyeball to eyeball and spend days and weeks and months and years together as we serve the Lord in local churches or in proximity to each other in other local churches. But that ought not to prevent us from having a sense of the width and breadth of this family and a concern to reach people who have a different culture, different background than ourselves. Because they are the Lord's creatures like ourselves, and because they need to be saved. Chile. That's the way you say that. Chile. It's an Indian name that means where the land ends. Kind of a strange looking country as you look at that map that I've given you. Long and skinny. 2,650 miles long, as long almost as the United States is wide. And yet at its widest point, not more than 250 miles wide, and I think you're going to have to strain to find that. It looks like to me there's some places where it's hardly 100 miles wide. 10 times as long as it is wide. Naturally divided from the rest of the southern part of South America by the Andes. Like a lot of South America, culture, if we can call it that, came by the Spaniards. The Spaniards were looking for gold when they came to Chile. They didn't find any. So they didn't pay too much attention to it. After Diego de Almagro came in 1535 and invaded Chile, invaded again in 1540 under Pedro de Valdivia, and drove out the Araucanian Indians from Chile, a thing that the Incas had not been able to do in earlier years, though they had tried it. In 1541, Valdivia founded Santiago, which of course means St. James. And for 300 years, the Indians continued to fight a rearguard action in southern Chile against the Spaniards, but of course it was a losing battle, and from 1500 to 1800, Chile was governed by the Spanish Viceroy of Peru. But they never found any gold, like they did in Peru, where the Inca gold gave them great fever. The Spaniards who colonized Chile, not having found any gold, made themselves wealthy on cattle and wheat. Because in the central valley of Chile, in the land that lies between the immensity of the Andes and the coastal mountains, there is a rich valley that makes rich crops, provides rich grass. And so in this way, Chile was made a prosperous, a reasonably prosperous place. Spain, at the first, allowed these plantation owners to seize the Indians that lived on the land and force them to labor. Bond servitude it was. But in 1791, Spain freed the Indians from that. And then in 1818, a fellow by the name of Bernardo O'Higgins, as they say it there, O'Higgins. H's don't get pronounced. O'Higgins, of all the names. For the deliverer of Chile, O'Higgins is about the last. It's Irish. Maybe his father was Irish. Because a lot of people from the British Isles got down into South America. But Bernardo O'Higgins, with the help of Jose San Martin, who was the deliverer of Argentina, led an army across the Andes and took the country from the Spaniards. And it was the first country in the Western Hemisphere, mark this down, it was the first country in the Western Hemisphere to abolish slavery. I can tell you that Chileans are a rather proud people of their country. I don't mean arrogant. But I can remember sitting in a restaurant on a Sunday afternoon where we had gone outside Quijota. And there was a singing group that went around while we were eating. You can imagine now that we were in a very fancy place, and it really was quite nice. And we had something to eat called Kaiser steak, which is a fine beef steak that is stuffed with ham and cheese, and then it is cooked in a pastry so that it was nice to eat. But it only cost $5. Only cost $5, just a little more than McDonald's. Well, we were sitting there, and this singing group was entertaining at each table. And the fellows that we were with, Brother Perez was there, Mark Morgan was there, Miguel Gomez was there, and they asked them to sing Chile Lindo, which they said was the song with which strangers were frequently welcomed. And they sang, Chile, Chile, lindo, lindo como el sol. Chile, Chile, beautiful, beautiful like the sun. And they sort of stood up straight
when it was being sung.
And later on, they would give us a rendition in the car. And when that one was over, they'd give us another song. They loved to sing in Chile. And it became evident that they are very proud of their national heritage. And I can understand. They have built the country on a narrow ridge between two mountain ridges that is 2,650 miles long, and the northern part of it is the driest desert in the world, and the southern part is frigid because it's so close to Antarctica. And their culture comes from so many places. There are many Germans in Chile. There are German schools that teach in Spanish and German, and sometimes all in German. There's a strong Arabic community. Mark Morgan's wife comes from a family that has Arab background. When I was standing waiting to catch the plane to Chile in the airport in Miami, which, as we have said, is the third foreign country that we visited and the one most frightening and most putting you in danger of the loss of your life. But I saw these two little boys, had all their baggage around them, and an older woman who obviously was a part of some very conservative religious group. I could tell that by her dress. I tried to speak to them in Spanish, then either... Well, the people they were with said they should have understood Spanish, but probably they didn't understand mine. But at last I learned that it was German that they spoke, and I tried to speak a little German with these lads. They didn't understand that very well either. But they were a part of a Mennonite group. German speaking, came from Canada, went all the way down into Chile. And that's not unusual. And not only are there groups, enclaves of different nationalities down in Chile, but they seem to be accepted readily. There's no problem. The fact that they haven't been totally homogenized into the society doesn't seem to bother the Chileans. They accept that very readily. They're very, very diverse kind of population. Of course, the basic population is made up of Indian blood mixed with Spanish, as so much of South America is. Well, let me read to you what I wrote down as I came in to the country. This is my log, so that'll introduce you to the visit we made. We left Thursday night late. Arrived in Santiago 9 a.m. on a clear morning. Met by Mark Morgan, Roberto Perez, Miguel Gomez, and Nestor Sanchez, who took us by car to Quito, 120 miles northeast of Santiago. We had lunch at noon with the Perez's in their house, slept in the afternoon, having been up all night. 6 p.m., brethren began arriving for the evening meal and the get-together. About 30 or more brethren, most preachers or teachers came. Roast pig, turkey, and hot dogs were served, along with artichokes, or as they said, artichofa. I kept trying to figure out, what is this artichofa? Artichofa. And this green plant that looked like a pineapple turned upside down, and you were supposed to pick the leaves out of it and dip it in the sauce and then just skim the end of the leaf off with your teeth. I'd never eaten that before. I thought it was some strange tropical food. Until finally I figured out by looking in the dictionary, it was artichoke. I'd never eaten artichoke either. But I'd heard about it before. And so we had it. Roast pig. Pig came from the farm. Brother Perez had raised that pig. The turkey came from his backyard turkey ranch, which isn't very big. It's not, of course, his whole compound, not as big as his auditorium here. And he has turkeys and chickens that he raises back there. And then after the meal was over, and it took a good while, a question period in the church building next door. You'll see all the pictures of that in the foyer of the building. And that went on till 12:30 a.m. in the morning. I mean, we hadn't had any real sleep the night before. I'd had a brief nap in the afternoon, and then this, and then up to 12:30. And then we went to bed. Saturday morning. In the morning after breakfast, took a stroll around the city with Mark and Miguel. Had lunch with the Perez. a nap, 3:30 to 4:30. Old men need the help. We left at 5 p.m. to go up the coast. Saw the beaches on the Pacific, the city of Viña del Mar, beautiful city, very modern. Ate ice cream in the city with the Perez's and Mark and Miguel, who had gone by train because there was not room in the car for him. But he was there ahead of us. By 8 p.m., we met with the church in Quilpue. I don't have any pictures of the Quilpue church, but I'll tell you where Quilpue is. If you'll find Viña del Mar on your map, just up coast from there, in a city of probably 100,000, there's a little church that meets in a hall. And we met with them. This was the first assembly of the saints that we were with when we went into Chile. And Larry spoke in Spanish. I preached in English, and Mark Morgan, as he did throughout our stay, interpreted. I found out that there were two brothers in the church there, and that one of them was partially supported by those brethren to do preaching, but they took care of their own affairs by and large. Then we went home, had a light snack. This was the way it was in Chile. We'd always eat after we came home. Whatever they are, we would eat. Talked in Spanglish, I put down here, because I was speaking about myself for an hour and a half and went to bed. Sunday morning, breakfast at 9 a.m., worship services at 10 a.m. We had the Lord's Supper first, which was perfectly orthodox. In the midst of the assembly, though, they had five or six prayers. Every time we'd sing, there'd be another prayer. And then there'd be another prayer. I liked it. I spoke in the Bible class hour, and Larry spoke in Spanish. Sunday at noon, a large dinner at the casino outside Kyoto, where we had that fancy steak and heard that music. And after that, I got too busy to write anything. Let me tell you how the church began, how sound churches came to Chile, and how the gospel in the last half of the century was first preached there. I don't know. I'm always careful about these statements. I don't know what God was doing in the whole country of Chile. How do I know there were no Christians in Chile before this? I don't know that. But I'm just telling you what I know and what the people I've talked to know about Christians, as we can define it from the New Testament, in the last half of this century. There was a man by the name of Everett Pickard, who went to Chile in 1959. He was just somebody that got excited. Had to study Spanish, had to learn Spanish, had to go down there. And the first man he converted, first person he converted, was named Roberto Perez. Brother Perez was operating a truck business, hauling produce in and out of Santiago in the early 60s. And he heard the gospel from this brother Pickard and received it. In the course of events, as they kept on studying on the basis of the principle that you did everything according to the New Testament, he said he had some problems with some of the things that were being done. And I suspect that it just sort of sat there inside of him. He decided that they would go back to his home territory around Kyoto and began there. He went back to the farm where his father had reared the children. And the first church to meet in that district was in that farmhouse, and it was his family. And, of course, Ephraim was there, daughter was there, and they had another daughter. I did not know about that. They lost a daughter to leukemia. It's difficult for them to talk about it still. And about the time they lost the daughter to leukemia, there was a family. There was a mother that had some children she was taking very poor care of. And so an agreement was made to let the Perez have one of the little girls. And so they took her as a foster daughter. Well, this happened during this time when there was a great emptiness because of the loss of their daughter to leukemia. And then after they had her for a while, the mother decided she wanted her back. And so she took them. Well, that was hard.
They stayed in touch, but not very close, were not able to. Till finally someone came to them some years later and said that the little girl had grown up and married and had children, and she was in very poor circumstances. And so Brother and Sister Perry's went and found her and brought her and took care of her. That she has three children, their foster daughter. She is a Christian. And the little children hang around the Perry's home all the time. I have a picture of them hanging on Larry in the back patio of the house, talking with him about various things when he was trying to do something else. But these are his grandchildren, his young grandchildren. He has older grandchildren by his son, of course, Ephraim, that we know, and by his daughter and her husband who live on the farm, his part of his father's farm. And there's something else that I learned about Brother Perry. And you'll see the picture of this brother named Juan, who happened on this Sunday morning to preside over the Lord's Supper. I didn't know the story. I didn't understand too much of what he said, but he presided very reverently at the Lord's table. And they took some time to eat the Lord's Supper. But this brother and his family were living in South Chile, and they were in terrible physical circumstances. Very poor. But I judged they had become Christians. Brother Juan did not know how to read or write. He had small children. Brother Perez made arrangements on his own to bring that family to Quito and help them to get established there. By the study of the Bible, Brother Juan learned to read and write. Today, one of his daughters is an accountant and one is a secretary. So what we are dealing with when we're dealing with Roberto Perez is not just a man who's been preaching the gospel for some years, but a man who's been trying to live it. Generous and compassionate and concerned. A real man, I would say. But I didn't finish my story. In 1963, they began that church in his home. And in 1963, a man by the name of Vernon Hawkins came to Talca, Chile. You can see that on your map. And 2 months later, a man named Philip Morgan arrived. These two men came from a more conservative background than did Brother Pickard. And as soon as they began to have anything to do with Brother Roberto, and he began to have anything to do with them, he began to get warning about these men not being good men. Well, it became apparent to Brother Perez that they were not bad men. And 1963 to 1964, Philip Morgan went from Talca to Quito, and I know it may not look very far on that map, but that's a pretty good distance. Everything in Chile is a long way off, I'll tell you that. We didn't cover much, just a little section. And it seemed like we were driving for hours. And the men that came to meet us that Friday evening had come 400, 500, even more miles than that. But three times a week for a year, Brother Morgan drove over to Quito and studied all day long with the Perez family and other brethren. Brother Hawkins became ill and had to go home in 1964, but Brother Morgan stayed on, and he is the one who is the beginning influence for sound instruction and teaching. Although one would have to give great credit to Roberto Perez because of his concern to know when to do that. Openness and willingness. Today there are 22 congregations in Chile that have what we would call, the Lord knows all, what we would call sound inclinations, sound desires so far as the gospel is concerned, the practice of the righteousness of Christ. There are probably three or four that are institutional in that direction. So you can see that the problem in Chile is not being covered up with brethren who want to do it the wrong way. And this is a consequence of the work of a man
who had a concern to do it and to do it right according to the will of Christ, who became a Christian because he wanted to serve the Lord, and he understood that being a Christian meant to serve it. And so, as a consequence of his work in Kyoto that work started. And out of Kyoto, the men were trained and went out to preach. A lot of the preachers in Chile came from Kyoto. Let me tell you approximately where these churches are before time escapes me here tonight. 22 churches in the country. 6 of them in Santiago. There is a church in La Serena. You can look up to the north. That's where Ivan Valdez is preaching. They've been there, I think, 4 years or 5 years, and planted a congregation there from nothing. There's even a little church in Iquique, which is up far to the north. And Brother Perez had made visits up to Iquique. And between La Serena and Iquique is this desert. Non-agriculture. The driest desert in the world, they told me. They had that to be proud of. The driest desert in the world. Doesn't get enormously hot, but it's dry. Totally dry. It's in that region, of course, that they mine copper and nitrate. But you can see how far out of Kyoto, Chile, the influence of the gospel has gone. There is a church, as we noted, meeting out from Viña del Mar in the Quilpue Church. There's a congregation meeting in Talca, a Brother Fernando Villarroyo. Marvelous man. He was present that Friday night. He's a truck driver. Not very many people who are serving the Lord in Talca today. That's where Philip Morgan began his work. That's where Brother Hawkins was 2 months before. And I can remember seeing the reports years ago of Philip Morgan, Talca, Chile. But that's where he is. He drives a truck to earn his living and preaches the gospel there. Lovable man. Wish I could have understood Spanish better. Made you want to hug his neck. Fernando Villarroy. There's a church in Chillon. A brother by the name of Omar Hurtado preaches there. This work was begun by Miguel Gomez, who is a nephew of Brother and Sister Perez. Miguel and his wife lived in Chillon. 3.5 years he spent there, as I recall, or nearly that. Or it was 2.5 years ago, maybe about 2.5 years he spent in planting the church in Chillon. And since then, he has moved to Concepcion to work with Mark Morgan, who moved from Valdivia. When the church in Valdivia was well established, and even had elders, at the first church in Chile that had elders. They don't have now, but they had elders in the past. And when that was in place, Mark determined to go to Concepcion, which is a city of more than 1 million people, and to try to plant a new congregation there. And Miguel from Chillon decided to come over and help him, and the two of them worked together there. And they have a third person who works with them, and that's the son of Ephraim Perez, who is in medical school there in Concepcion. So there are 3 of them there. They've been there less than 1 year trying to plant the gospel. It is not easy work, but they are hard at the task. There are churches spread across the central part of Chile, with the one exception of Iquique. And they exist because somebody went in and worked hard, long hours. I want to tell you about the meeting places of the churches in Chile. Most of them are built on the property of brethren, just extensions of the house in some cases. The church that meets in Kyoto, the meeting place, is an extension of Brother Perry's home. That's what it is. You'll see from the picture. That's the case. The church out of Progreso, where Miguel Hurtado preaches, is just the front room of a farmhouse that this widow and her 5 sons, they farmed this place. They just made that the meeting place of the church. Would I do that? Why, surely we would do that. So the church meets in her house all the time. And I can understand Paul's statements in Romans when he said, and the church in their house. Well, maybe that's what he had in mind. This is a little church meeting out the outskirts and the farmland from Kyoto. And then
There's a church in Talagante down in the outskirts of Santiago that just had this little hole-in-the-wall hall. I'm talking about a hole-in-the-wall. I'm talking about tiny. In fact, we got in there that night, and there was not room for everybody to sit. And I kept trying my best to stand up, but they weren't letting me stand up. I mean, you know, visiting American brother had to have a seat. Going to speak that night had to have a seat. And so somebody else was standing. But there was no room for everybody to sit. Small. But that's what they had. Brethren, I want to tell you something. This is nice, but it's not necessary. I'm glad we have it. And we can put it to good use. But it's not necessary. And if we lose it, we won't have lost anything vital. It's a good tool. Good tool. The Lord has blessed us with it. And we ought to use it since He put it in our hands to serve Him and to serve Him well. But we see churches that are vital and growing and doing good things that are not large and they don't have fine meeting houses. In fact, in Chile, there's not, I guess, the Madrid church in Santiago has, I don't know if they're renting the place or what they're doing, but it was the largest meeting place of any church that we were in. How to tell this story so that you'll understand what's happening in Chile. A young man by the name of Miguel Hurtado lives in Quillota, 30 years old, with his wife Maria and little son Miguelito. He works with two churches. Progreso, the one that I mentioned where the widow and her five sons have made their home available as a meeting place for the church, and another congregation. He did go to three. He was going out to Limache, which is another congregation now, where Brother Ferris often goes as well. Limache is a former Pentecostal group. And they are now serving the Lord. Miguel invited us to his home. We had a wonderful meal that his wife had cooked. I could look in the corner of the bedroom and see through the wall. The house was well kept. It was clean. But it was a simple home. Miguel does not have an automobile and told Brother Payton had no interest in getting one. He could get about by the buses and the train. Brother Parrish doesn't have an automobile either. Several of the preachers have automobiles in Chile, long distances to travel. But Brother Parrish does not have. It's against the law for a colorblind man to drive an automobile in Chile. And he's colorblind. So the world has been spared his driving skills. But he goes by train and bus everywhere. One day, when we were busy about something else, actually nothing that critical, we had to eat with his daughter and son-in-law while he was on a bus trip or a train trip somewhere to study with a man that he'd been studying with a long time. But Miguel Hurtado, in so many ways, expresses the same spirit that you see in Roberto Perez. He's not asking for money. He's receiving some. He said even his wife doesn't know how much. He said, I don't need any more. Don't need a car. He did ask about books. He needs books and study materials. Gave us a list of things that they have nothing in Spanish to study. The Gospels particularly had nothing. First and Second Timothy had nothing. And we had more questions about elders and how elders function in Chile than you could shake a stick at, because they were concerned about that development in the churches and meeting the problems that they face. Young churches, the vital kind of people, I could see they could have an argument every now and then. I could see some arguments that had already occurred as a result of that question and answer session we had in Kyoto on that Friday night. I could tell that some of these questions are coming up as a result of some discussions that have been had previous to this, and you could see there was some tension. There was tension in places. But I had the feeling that they would ask enough questions and deal with it sufficiently in a biblical and godly way that they'd solve that problem. I had the feeling that they were all together there in one house, in one place, talking and asking questions. But young men like Miguel Hurtado, who simply said we could just use some mature people here. When Efrain Perez left Chile, there was a big gap left.
He's 40-some-odd years old, and he was a mentor for some of these younger men. They're not that old. And he had trained many of them. And they're feeling the need to have that sort of person there again. And I guess what's going to have to happen is they're going to have to grow up and be that kind of person. Most likely. But there are some noble people there. Some noble women. Sister Perry's takes the bus and goes out to Limache twice a month to teach the women. They've asked her to teach the children. They're very busy people. Teaching, 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 teaching. And they've got a big country to cover and a lot of cities that are huge, huge cities. Beginning with, of course, the capital of 4 million people. But I felt about our visit there that we were having fellowship with a good man who had taught his son and his daughter to serve the Lord. Who had so taught his son to serve the Lord that he shared his father's passion for preaching, and I have the impression is a man who, standing on his father's shoulders, is even more capable than his father. But it's like Harry Pickup said once, when someone told him that his son could preach better than he could, he said, "He cannot preach better than I can." He said, "I'm preaching the best I can, and nobody can preach better than that. And nobody will excel Brother Roberto in his preaching efforts because he throws his heart into it." We sat around that dining table night after night, and lunch period after lunch period, the four of us, five of us, talking about the best we could. And as Larry and I reminisced, we'll always hear Brother Roberto. When something was really bad, he'd say, "Oh, terrible." Or if a man was really good and the situation was really happy, he'd say, "Oh, excellent, excellent." In fact, we kept asking about preachers. And every time we'd ask about it, "Excellent, excellent." We kept trying to find somebody who's just mediocre. We couldn't get anybody who's mediocre. Everybody's excellent. There's a passion about the Chileans. There's a passion in the heart of these people. There's an openness in the heart of these people. There's an energy in them that you would just find exciting when you're around them. They laugh and talk and smile a lot. And there's a constant patter going on. And they're like the Italians, as best I know how to describe it. Very like the Italians. Passionate people. But they've got a lot of people in their country that are lost, and they have the burden of preaching to them, and they do appreciate so much those of us who care too about their land and their people and who are having fellowship with them. Money can't do a lot of things, you see. You can't buy people like that. The Lord has to make that sort of people. All we can do is share our material things with them and pray for them and continue to be good partners with them in this gospel endeavor. I don't suspect I've told this story very well, but it really is the story of men like Brother Paris and the younger men that he has trained and the men that Ephraim has trained and who've gone out from this place and begin preaching here and there. Very strong pioneer kind of stock. Have to have that kind of spirit, you see. But I want to tell you something. We need it too. We need to be tough. We do. We need to be tough people. We need to be able to do some hard things. We need to go out and be able to preach in some hard places. We need to be able to go to some homes that may be a little tough. Talk to those people about Christ. We need to be able to go to some places where they don't welcome us with open arms, where they may send us on our way rejoicing. We need to be able to do that. They've got challenges in Chile. We've got challenges here. You'd be interesting to know that one of the most vital religious movements in Chile is nearly all South America is the Pentecostal movement. The largest church in Santiago is a Methodist church, which is charismatic. The largest, not a Catholic church. And many of the people that they've been reaching down there are Pentecostals. In fact, we asked the question of some of them, How were you converted? We'd like to know what it was that got you. But we'd like to know how to reach some of these folk that we care about in our own country. One brother down, Talagante, in whose home we spent time, and you'll see his picture and that of his wife and daughter in the foyer. He'd been a Pentecostal. They'd studied with him 2 years before, Brother Sanchez had. No results. 2 years later, he came back. That was just 2 or 3 months ago, and said, well, he had been to all of these churches and seen all they had to show him, and he had decided that what they were teaching was the truth. And he was ready to be a Christian. So he became a Christian. And his wife and daughter are not Christians, but they're attending there, that little congregation. And already Nestor's got another area out where people are coming into Talagante, and he wants to go out there and start another assembly. So they're ready to start out there. Reminds me of early days here. Well, it's good to have fellowship with these people, but I'm telling you, we've got to be like them. We have got to be like them. We don't want to be soft. There needs to be about us some, we need to have some steel about us that will enable us to do hard work in order to accomplish the purposes of God. And I appeal to everybody, beginning with myself, that we think ourselves clear of all this involvement in things that don't matter that much, and begin to put our heart into teaching other people. Teaching other people. Teaching other people. We're having fellowship with folk that are doing what we ought to be doing. Isn't that right? We're having fellowship with people who are doing what we ought to be doing and can do. We can do it. We've made a beginning. There's just a great deal more that we can accomplish, and by the grace of God, we're going to do it. We're going to do that. I want to do it. I want to put myself into work that perhaps I've been neglecting. I want to be busy in teaching other people. If you're not a Christian, you're missing the most exciting thing that ever happened to human beings. That's all you're missing. You're missing the greatest relationship that a man ever had. You're missing the most fulfilling life that a man ever lived. You're missing the most vital hope that was ever given to a human heart. You're missing it all. And we don't want you to do that. You don't want to do that. And whatever's been keeping you from confessing your faith in Jesus and being saved in Him, that just ought not to be. Just put that out of your mind tonight and realize, as I know you do, that Jesus Christ is all, and that you've got to have Him if you don't have anything else in this whole life of yours. And come to the Lord tonight, confessing your faith in Him and committing your life to Him as you are baptized into His death for the remission of your sins. While we're standing in this.